Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 143. I'm Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey, I'm here.
Yes, we are here this week. We're sorry we missed last week's episode. Thanksgiving happened. It's been a busy time.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of moving. Now I'm
Stuff going on.
Yeah, I got some stuff going on. I am now sick as a result of the moving, so that's super awesome. So if I sound a little weird, that's why. If I start sneezing and shit, that's why. But to make up for missing a week, we actually have a pretty jam-packed episode today.
Yeah.
We got a couple, actually three movies that are currently in theaters, a bunch of stuff on video, a little bit of TV, and yeah, we got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to it. Starting off with the latest Pixar film, Coco. It's just released in theaters. We talked a little bit about this, didn't we, Chris?
Yes.
Briefly.
Yes, we did.
We both like it. I think before we even... it's part of it. Before we get to the movie itself...
Why don't I start off with the experience of watching Coco?
I have an airing of grievances. first off, like every Pixar film, there's a short before it. Unfortunately, this short is I don't think really technically a short. It's like over 20 minutes long. And it's not even by Pixar. It's a Disney short. It's like a Frozen thing.
Mm-hmm. It's Disney Animation Studios.
Yeah, I don't think it's very good at all. I was very put off by it. I mean, it's hard to be really mad at it other than the fact that, if it was, 5 minutes long, I would have been like, whatever, it's fine. But it's so long that I think...
It is 21 minutes.
We have to discuss it. Yeah, it's so... Because it's that long, I think we have to discuss it in terms of, how it affects the movie. Because you go in to see this movie, and you're not actually going to see the movie that you want to see until almost an hour later. And it kind of ruined Coco in a way for me. I mean, it didn't ruin it. I liked Coco. But I'm annoyed going into the actual movie. I'm annoyed at what I just had to sit through.
Yeah,
and then by the end of Coco, it feels like I've been in the theater for too long. And I'm wanting this movie that's not too long to end because it's been artificially lengthened.
I mean, Coco is an hour and 50 minutes long. The short is 21 minutes long, which puts you at, two hours and 10 minutes of just film. And then I assume that you have the same experience that I do here. There's a good, 20 to 25 minutes of trailers before a movie now.
Yeah. So you're talking, Coco is an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Just a little bit on the longer side for an animated film, but nothing crazy. But then you're turning it into this 3-hour experience that I think it hurts it. It's just by the end of Coco, I'm ready for it to be done when I should have just been wrapped up in what is actually a wonderful movie. So that's my complaint on that. I think I was very pissed off about it right away. But I am not alone. Every review I've heard mentions this. In Mexico, where Coco is, I think, the highest grossing film of all time now, they removed the short because people were so pissed off about it. How did it strike you? Did you like Olaf's – what is it called? Olaf's
Winter? Frozen Adventure.
Frozen Adventure, yeah.
Because, you have to get Frozen in there. You have to Frozen. It was fine. I didn't hate it. It did feel a little long. I'm like, it's whatever. But
a little long? Come on. At some point, I'm rolling my eyes, and I got up, and I went to the bathroom, and I came back, and I could not believe it. I thought I'd be catching it in the opening credits of Coco, and we're still in this fucking Frozen short. It's to the point, I was turning to my girlfriend going, what the fuck is going on here?
But I did think it was funny. One of your buddies, he got confused.
He also went. Yeah,
he thought it was a. He thought they were showing the wrong movie.
Yeah, he like went out to the lobby and started asking the employees. They're like, "Did you guys put on the wrong thing?" I mean, I don't want to go on too long, but yeah, I think a short film is typically 5 to 8 minutes, and you know, cut it off at 8. Jesus Christ. This was, I heard in some review, they're like, this was something that was going to be like on the Disney Channel, and they instead tacked it onto this.
It probably should have been. Like, I don't feel that, like, Coco is not a Christmas movie. Like, so I don't really feel that there was much need to tack on a Christmas short to this.
Look, I like the shorts before Pixar films. I think it's a cool thing. They like whet the appetite. They set the stage for you. And this thing was soulless. It was a half hour of advertising. It did not set the stage for Coco. It's the opposite of Coco, I thought. So it really annoyed me. I'm glad that you were okay and like it didn't
Do as much. I mean, it didn't bother me. My kids ended up liking it, which ultimately that's all Disney gives a shit about.
You just think of like I know not everyone likes this short, but I really liked it, like Lava before Inside Out. It was just like a nice, beautiful, almost like a poem. And it's you're in and out in 5 minutes. It's over whether you like it or hate it. Then you're on to Inside Out. You know what I mean? And then with this, it's just I feel like they should reconsider leaving that in there. I don't know. I think it's bad. I think it's. It hurts what is a movie that we'll get into that I think is really good.
I don't know if we're going to talk about any of this because there's not really much need to discuss Disney's marketing of Coco. But, I mean, it did quite well at the box office over the holiday. But I feel that it's been lacking, and they don't know how to market it.
Yeah.
And guess what they do know how to market?
Yeah.
Frozen. So it's like, hey, there's going to be a brand new Frozen feature.
Oh, God. Do you think there's people going to this to see Frozen shorts?
I wouldn't doubt that people are bringing their kids to go see Frozen. Like, hey, there's going to be new Frozen stuff. Oh, and there's another Disney cartoon after it. Like, this is going to be a good outing. I'm not saying that's why, like, you know, that's how. But I can see somebody going, fuck, how the hell do we market this to middle America that seems to hate Mexicans? Like, they fucking hate them. Like, how do we market this? Guess what? White people like Frozen. Like,
yeah, that's another thing that like struck me is like Frozen is the whitest fucking like shit you could ever think of before a movie that celebrates Mexican culture.
Yeah.
I guess we'll get into all of that stuff probably with the review a little bit. But I there's one more thing I wanted to mention about my movie-going experience outside of the movie itself. And that is the audience I saw it with. We went to go see it on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. So it was technically the opening night. Although opening nights are weird now. It's like there's the opening night and there's the night before the opening night.
Opening night is actually Tuesday now for a Wednesday movie.
So... anyway, so we went on the official opening night at the 7 p.m. showing. It was not a packed house. I'd say it was at least 50% full. And it was all, like, moms or moms and dads with kids. Which, I mean, obviously, it's a kids movie. It's a family movie. That's right. To be expected, I guess. But the behavior from not only the kids but the parents as well I thought was unacceptable. I don't know what it was like at your screening, but like I'm telling you, it was people like there's kids running up and down the aisles the whole movie. There was a little kid next to me that kept looking over to me and trying to touch me and shit, and like was like trying to like talk to me and shit. There's a mom like two seats away from him. There's like, who wants some popcorn? Did you get some popcorn? Did you get some popcorn? Like while the movie's playing, like talking about like popcorn and shit. I'm like, the parents weren't. You know, I expect kids, yeah, they don't know what the fuck's going on. They think they're in their living room, they're having fun, or whatever. But it's the parents, instead of, like, trying to be like, shh, be quiet, like, they were, like, bad as the kids encouraging the behavior, acting as if they're in their living room. I was pretty annoyed. I really almost wanted like someone from the theater to come in and be like, "Everyone, shut the fuck up!" Like, there's people that paid to watch the movie,
and you know they never will, because they don't want to piss off those people. So like, you can go complain, and they'll throw some free passes at you. Like, they'll be like, come back another day. Like that, I know from experience, like having friends that managed movie theaters, that's basically how these corporate chains like operate. Like, they don't want to piss anybody off. So it's like, oh, you're upset. All right, here's some free passes. Come back another day. We're really sorry. Like,
yeah, it makes sense. I just,
it's shitty.
Let me put it this way. If it was in, let's say it's an R-rated movie and someone's talking through the whole movie, they wouldn't come in and correct that if you wouldn't complain. You know what I mean? Like,
No.
We're not enforcing anything here.
There's no confrontation. Like, unless like somebody is doing something illegal, like, and at that point, then they bring like the police or security in.
I just feel like, you know, and I've seen a lot of Pixar films in theaters at this point, and from my memory, this was not my experience with Inside Out or WALL-E or any of the ones I've seen. Like, for whatever reason, the crowd I was with that night just did not give a shit. And it also made it hard to pay attention to the movie at points. But,
yeah, I don't, like, I have four kids. I brought my four kids to the movies. I do not put up with that bullshit. Like,
you will go complain and get your free, or you won't let your kids.
No, I don't let my kids do that. Like, yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris. Dear God.
I understand like exactly where you're coming from. I love going to the movies. Like both of us go to the movies a lot, and I don't want that experience. But I also know, like, hey, kids can be assholes, but like, it's on the parent to control that behavior,
or at least attempt. You know, if you at least attempt, I'd feel better about it. But they weren't. The parents were being as bad. So it's
right. Like, there's very little you could, like, shh, all right, Billy, like, we get it. Like, you like it.
Yeah.
You have a good time. But like, you're trying to defuse the situation, trying not to have like it. But a lot of times, like, these parents are just letting them run up and down the aisles. And
Dude, if I was a parent, I'm not a parent, but if I were, I like to think that if my kids started running up and down the aisles or started being very loud, I would take them by the hand and walk them out to the lobby and say, hey, there's other people trying to watch the movie, just shush, or whatever, calm them down, whatever I have to do. Make sure that they're going to behave before I go back in. But I'm not a fucking parent, so what the fuck do I know?
It is, not to draw this out any longer, but it is funny, like, considering that a Frozen short played in front of this, like, the first movie I brought my youngest daughter to was Frozen that Thanksgiving, and she started acting up about halfway through, and I did not see the rest of that movie because I took her right out of the theater, like,
well, I brought her out to the
bar, and no, parents don't do that. It sucks. Like, and movies are expensive.
Yeah, it's like, this was a date night for me and my girlfriend. Like, I get it. We're at a family movie, but, you know, Pixar movies are for everyone. There's paying adults there that want to watch the movie, like, are serious film goers. So, that's my little rant about fucking people and the Frozen short. Let's get to something that is, I think, a lot better than any of that. The film itself, man.
Yeah.
It's where to begin? How about you set us up for Coco?
All right. I mean, it's a movie about this young boy Miguel, who he's growing up in a family of shoemakers, and like, ancestrally, over the last few generations, music has been banned from that family. Like, they do not sing, they do not play instruments, they do not listen to music, they like view music as bad. Like, and there's a reason for that, and they explain that very early on. But this little boy, he wants to be a musician, like, and he has idolized this other musician, Ernesto de la Cruz, who is like the most popular musician ever in Mexico.
Yeah, like, he used to star in a bunch of old movies and stuff.
He's basically Mexican Elvis. Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, not to shortcut it, but I mean, for, you know, an easy correlation, like
For our understanding, I guess I do. I believe he is based on, like, so if you were from Mexico, you would know
who this
who
guy is.
he's like referencing somebody. Yeah, like
Like that.
it's not the exact guy. Like, it's not that name, but there was a very famous Mexican actor who sang and was in a bunch of old movies.
Like the correlation to me was definitely Elvis, like, you know,
Oh,
singer,
absolutely. Yeah.
actor, like super popular. So he has fallen in love with like this guy's music, and he wants to follow his heart. Like he, there's a, you know, the guy has a like catchphrase, I guess, that's like, you know, something about chasing after your dreams, something along that line. Like that's what he wants to do. And he comes up with this idea that his great grandfather is this guy, Ernesto de la Cruz. And he goes and tries to steal the guitar, and he ends up in the land of the dead. And then it's an adventure to get him back because he needs to get the forgiveness of his family to return. So it's this little boy who's real, who's alive. He ends up in the land of the dead on the Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
And they like when the spirits can cross over to their family and visit them. And that's right. It becomes this adventure, this musical adventure in the land of the dead.
Through the afterlife.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few things, there's a lot of things I really like about this, but just based on, you know, the setting and all that, like, dude, like, one, I love the art associated with the Day of the Dead. You know, like, just the art style is very cool. And then the look of this movie in general is just very beautiful.
Yeah,
They
super colorful.
make a point of pointing out too before the film all the work that goes into like just a single shot. Like when he first enters the City of the Dead or whatever it is called, like, it's just, I think they said there's like 8 million individual lights that they drew
Yeah.
to make it. Like, so
There's like 7,000 buildings, like, and it's layered, like it's an amazing piece of like technical artistry. And also like
yeah.
artistic artistry, but like just from like an amazing technical aspect, like of
Yeah.
how they built this thing.
Yeah, I love the look of everything. I love the fact that it's a movie dealing with kind of like heavy stuff. Pixar, you know, this is not, you know, foreign to them. They did Inside Out, right? So this is a movie that's dealing like with death and ancestry, you know, and family history and shit.
Yeah, and trying to like be accepted by your family, but also like charting your own course at the same time. And
And just like it's got a little bit of an edge to it, I think. Like, just, dude, all of the characters in the film, once he enters this, they're all skeletons, you know? Like,
yeah.
if you're a real little kid, you might find some of this kind of scary, even though it's not trying to be scary most of the time. There's really heavy subject matter, I think, like the idea of the final death, that you stay alive in the afterlife only as long as someone in the living world remembers you.
Yeah,
It's like,
that's totally
it's pretty,
terrifying, right?
yeah, like, it's terrifying to me as an adult. I'm like, Jesus
What
Christ, when this guy
if,
disappears at one point, I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Yeah, there's a lot I really liked about this. I mean, I think this is top tier Pixar, dude. I don't know about you, but like,
it's an excellent Pixar movie. Miguel is a he's a super charming little character. He's super relatable. Hector, who is his kind of guide in the afterlife, who also plays a major role in the climax, and which you might be able to pick that out, like where some of that stuff is going. But he's fun. Like he's kind of like this no good kind of con man, and like his idea is like he just wants to get back and see his daughter
Yeah, there's this whole
before
weird
he forgets.
So, like, the people in the land of the dead get to visit the land of the living, like, get to visit their relatives on the Day of the Dead. That's another thing I really like about this is how steeped it is in Mexican culture. Like, it's about that holiday, you know? Like, I learned shit about that holiday I didn't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's amazing that, like, I mean, there's so many movies and TV shows that, like, show aspects of this, but, like, I never really understood why the photos are, like, out on the mantelpiece or something like that, like, surrounded by candles. And, like, they explain that here. Like, it's
about it. Like, the movie is about that holiday, you know, and about respecting your family and where you came from and remembering them, like, keeping their memory alive. That's a lot of what the movie's about.
Right. And, I mean, it definitely ties in with, like, you need to keep their memory alive or they – basically die again.
Yeah, it's like that's the final death. Yeah. Just love all like. But the reason I got off on a tangent, you're talking about how he's like trying to cross over. Like, there is a weird element to like border crossing element to that.
Yeah.
Which it didn't really occur to me at first until the more I thought about it, I was like, that's a little weird. But it's not. It's not like offensive or. In fact, I think the movie is very respectful. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a Mexican, so I don't know.
People
I know like, who are Mexican loved it. They thought it was a great movie. Like, my coworker went and saw it. He's Mexican. He's like, the movie was great. It just seems like a celebration of their culture without being condescending in any way. I don't know. There's a lot of things. I like sitting there like afterwards trying to pick apart things I like. That were not perfect about it. I was like, well, at least for me, I thought like the music wasn't super memorable, and the music is a big part of the movie, but maybe it's just because, you know, the first time you hear a song, it doesn't always like stick in your head, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes like it takes a couple listens.
And I wasn't like a huge fan of Remember Me, which is a big song
that's like the big song in the movie. Yeah.
And like, it didn't really stick, but it is funny. There's a whole bit in about halfway through the movie where Miguel is trying to he's basically appearing on like, you know, Land of the Dead Idol, where he's going to be able, like, if you win, you get to go perform at this big party. And sort of like, hey, like Hector's like, what are you going to play? What are you going to play? And he's like, I'm going to play Remember Me. It's like, no, you can't play that one. Like, everyone plays that one.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's the overplayed song. Don't sing that one. It's funny that, like, it even knows that, like, somewhere in there, like, hey, like, this is our big song, but, you know, there's other music here to be played.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the other thing that I guess could be a knock against it is, I did see the twist coming that we kind of already referenced. I saw it coming. I don't think I saw it coming too far in advance. I think I leaned over to my girlfriend about a minute before it came and said, that's him.
I figured before that.
Yeah.
Like what the relationship was, but how it turned out, how it played out was. I was not expecting
dark.
That.
Very, like, very, yeah. Like, speaking of adult subject matter, like, there's a murder mystery in there somewhere. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. I guess the other thing is, the big tearjerker at the end, I saw that coming too. I knew that's what he would have to do for Coco. And despite knowing that is what you'd have to do, it totally worked on me. I got a little misty-eyed. I wasn't like bawling, but I got a little misty-eyed by it. I mean, Pixar, they know how to play your emotions. That's part of why we go to see them, you know. But despite those are like the smallest nitpicks. That's me sitting there going, okay, where are the flaws in this thing? Like, I'm turning it over. Where are the flaws?
Pull apart.
Right. Yeah, and generally, it's just a wonderful movie that. You know, I think it gets a little bit of extra points for me for what it's attempting to do. I don't think it could be understated that the fact of the representation that it's giving. Like, I just think about like my girlfriend, her sister's kids are Mexican, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about them, how all the big Disney movies and shit they get to go see is shit like Frozen. And what it must feel like for them, you know, being like, you know, 8 to 10 years old to go see a movie like this that they get to see themselves on the screen, right. Like a big budget Disney movie. I don't think that the worth of that could be overstated. So I give this movie major props. I don't just love it just because of that. I just think it's an extra thing in its favor.
Yeah, no, it's nice that, you know, Disney and Pixar, you know, attempted to do something different and give a little more representation out there.
And it's great. And it works. Tell more non-white stories. I'd be happy to watch those too. You know,
I mean, like just like learning about this culture and learning about the holiday was like super fascinating. Like,
yeah,
like I mean, that would be educational for a lot of people. If you can make a good movie, you can make a good story. Guess what? You can not only entertain them, but educate them and show them like, hey, these people have differing cultures and like, they're not just brown skinned people that want to chase over our border.
Like, you know, maybe if there were more Cocos in the world, we would have never elected Trump.
Ended up where we are. Right.
Yeah. You know, maybe, you know, kids that grow up with this type of representation on the big screen and big budget, big blockbuster films won't grow up filled with hate. So yeah, I mean, that's outside of just I think the quality of the movie. This is a perfectly wonderful family movie.
Yeah.
It's up there with the best of Pixar. So, I don't know, Chris, what, I guess it's final verdict time, unless you have more to say about it.
No, I think we, pretty much hit on all the fun. Like it's a lovely film, like beautifully rendered, beautiful colors. Like, I think the one letdown for me was the music, which we talked about a bit. Like,
I'm surprised because I've heard a lot of people say like, they love the music, and for me, it just didn't. I think it's if I watch the movie a couple times, I'll start to like him more. But
it's not my style of music that I like. Like, I'm not, and I mean, this is certainly a cultural thing. Like, I am not into a lot of like Mexican guitar playing, and
dude, I'm not. I guess here's the thing. Right as the movie's starting, they do, what's that, the Disney theme or whatever at the beginning. They do like a mariachi version of it as the logo's playing. And I was like, fucking, I'm down. This is cool. It wasn't as catchy to me on first pass.
I mean, it could be like maybe the songs just didn't hit with me. Maybe if they did something else. But overall, I really liked it. It's a 4 for me. Very solidly in my top 10 for the year so far. So.
Yeah, it's very solidly my top 10. I thought about giving it a 4, but I'm like, I can't justify giving it less than a 5. I'm like, to me, this is as good as WALL-E. It's as good as Inside Out. Dude, I love it. Did it hit me as hard as either of those? No. But I can't really point out anything I don't really like about it, so I'm giving it a 5.
All right.
Also in theaters, Chris.
Yeah.
You have actually seen a couple of movies I have not seen, so unfortunately I won't be able to give my opinion, but I'll try to help you along here. Murder on the Orient Express.
Sure. I don't want to spend too much time on this. One, it's been out for about 3 weeks now. Also, it's painfully dull. It is a movie based on Agatha Christie's novel of the same name, starring her celebrated detective Hercule Poirot, like this fantastic detective investigator, whatever. As the name of the film implies, there is a murder on the train, and Poirot is kind of set out to figure out who it was before they get to the next stop. Kenneth Branagh directs. He also stars. For some reason, I thought he was Ewan McGregor the entire time. That was evidently not true.
There's a slight resemblance, I guess.
Yeah. I will say that Branagh, McGregor clone, whatever, very, like, he gives a great performance as Perot. It's just the rest of the cast, like, they're just not interesting. Johnny Depp plays the person who's murdered. He's kind of a sleazebag. I mean, this cast
in real life or in the movie?
Possibly both. I mean, he is the sleazebag guy who gets murdered in the film, though. But I mean, like, this cast is pretty crazy. Daisy Ridley, Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad, Johnny Depp, as I mentioned, Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, this cast is William Dafoe. The cast is crazy.
Yeah, it's an all-star cast.
It is just so dull. Like, it is just a boring mystery. Nothing is... It's... At the end, I mean, maybe some of it is... I've read the book years ago, so I kind of knew where it was going, but it's just not... It's not exciting. There's supposed to be this tension. It's just not there. It's a wonderfully shot film. Like, Brana knows how to frame a shot. Like, he put together a beautiful looking movie here, but it is just not entertaining at all. And that's, yeah, it's just, it's a two all the way through. Like, it's just not very good.
Yeah. I mean, I was avoiding it based on the trailer. Honestly, I thought, like, I just got that a weird vibe off the trailer. Like, it seemed, the trailer itself seemed self-satisfied. Like, oh, look at how cool we are.
Look at how great I can shoot. And...
Well, it was not a typical trailer. It was not made, or at least as far as I could tell, it was not made from pieces of the movie. It was like made on its own to advertise the movie, like where they're going through a train. I'm like, here's this character, and this is this character, and which one is it going to be? And I don't fucking care, because you're all a bunch of like British looking sounding fuckers, and
yeah,
looks stuffy and boring and... I judged it based on the trailer, and I don't know. It's like an Agatha Christie thing, right? Like,
it is, yeah.
I never read any of that shit. So, I don't know. I never... And just the whole, like, weird murder mystery thing, like, I never seen Clue. So,
okay.
I don't know. I guess it's never been my jam. Did you ever... Is there previous film versions of Murder on the Orient Express?
There are... And I probably see. I know there's Peter, our co-host on Perfectly Sane show. He said there's a BBC show. I know there are other adaptations. I've seen some in the past.
Okay.
There's one in 2001. There's a 1974 movie. There's a 2010 TV movie. There's a
Christ.
It's been done over and over again, and I don't think this brings anything new to it. So,
yeah, we already know who the killer is. So,
yeah.
Anyways,
everybody. Oops, I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, spoilers. That's okay. And the other film in theaters,
Justice League.
Yeah,
Justice League. All right. I like Batman vs Superman.
And I don't hold that against you.
Let's like that. I think that needs to be out there, though. I like that movie. Yeah. Justice League's all right.
That's what everyone said. I have most people are like, it's not terrible, but it's not good. It's just kind of okay.
I think so. Justice League is the culmination of. The DC
movies.
Yes, it's three movies, but like it feels like it's been so much more, right? Like, because it there should have been so much more. Like, it's trying to fast track what Marvel did and get to the Avengers without the floor work.
Yeah.
But this movie has some of the same issues that the Avengers had.
Yeah.
There's too many heroes.
Overstuffed, overlong.
Yeah, it's not over long. It's only 2 hours long, which is it moves at a very brisk pace. It's just there's not enough time to focus on any of the characters and really drive it out. The villain is very like poorly portrayed because you don't get to understand his motivations. And a lot of the motivations for these are just, I'm going to destroy the world. Like,
yeah.
It's like, but why? And like most of the movie here is spent with Batman and Wonder Woman trying to get this team together, Aquaman, Flash, Cyborg. And then like another, you know, third of it is spent trying to get Superman back through some like weird trickery that you have to have seen Batman versus Superman to even understand what is going on. And then there's like a final battle, which is fun, but it just kind of happens and then it's over. And then the movie's over. It was like, well, that was cool. Like, cool in the way the Avengers was cool. Like, it's really neat to see all these heroes on screen working together and fighting a thing, but there's nothing to the film. Like, there's no character development. There's nothing pushing any of these characters forward. There's nothing moving the universe forward. It's just, hey, these guys got together. They kicked the bad guy's ass. Game over. Like,
yeah.
See what happens next.
When you're talking about the villain, you know, one thing that stood out to me this year about a movie I was at first not in love with, but like major props to Spider-Man Homecoming, dude. Like Michael Keaton as the villain in that movie was basically just a small business owner, Bernie Bro, who like said, fuck the man. And he was just doing illegal shit to make money. Like it made sense. It didn't need to be more than that. Didn't need to be end of the world. Like, yes. Every time with these fucking movies, it always has to be the end of the world. It's like, maybe it could be something else that makes a little more sense. It isn't so convoluted and stupid.
Can't we fight on a smaller scale and get a more personal story with these people, right?
Like, exactly.
And I actually think that's something that Nolan's films do really well, like his Batman movies did. Except for maybe Rises, which gets a little overblown.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Ra's al Ghul and the Scarecrow, like, you get that.
It was a small story about a mentor, you know, a mentor and, you know, his student.
Yeah.
Where they have to fight out, like, fight at the end. It's like, that's a great, like you said, personal story.
And
even Civil War at the very end deflated into that, and you're like, oh. And it got. Yeah. It gets more credit for me for doing that.
Because you care, right? Yeah. Like
it's about a human thing. It's not about fucking some evil villain wants to blow up the world. Because
ultimately, you know that they're not going to blow up the world because the heroes win.
Yeah, and there's no real motivation to blow up the world other than to blow up the world.
Right.
Whereas, like, you look at in Civil War, the guy was trying to teach them a lesson. And Spider-Man Homecoming, dude's just trying to make money, bro. Like, you know, what more do you need than that?
He happened to stumble across some alien tech from, funnily enough, from, like, the Avengers battle fallout in that first Avengers movie. And he came across, like, some of the Skrull tech and, like, was able to turn it into something that worked for him. So... it's crazy. But yeah, I would prefer maybe a little bit more of that than these like big blown out things. It's also fun. It's a good spectacle.
Also, do we need a universe? Can we just do Wonder Woman movies and Batman movies? And then maybe sometimes the other character shows up in one of them. Like, that's okay. But does it have to always be building to this fucking climax of every fucking superhero in our fucking arsenal? Like,
right.
In
one movie? I want to say no, because I would prefer them get back to just telling me Batman stories.
Yeah,
right?
Give me
like,
a Batman movie, goddammit.
Like, give me, like, in fact, like, before this bullshit started, like, with the DC Cinematic Universe or Extended Universe, whatever the hell they're calling it today, like, Man of Steel was fun. Like, all right, maybe fun's not the right word, but it was a good Superman movie. Like,
I mean, there are people who would argue with that. I think people who are strong fans of Superman think it's a misrepresentation of his character. I personally am with you. I thought it was a great movie, you know? And part of it is because it didn't feel like...
connected.
Like, I don't need all these connective tissues. And, like, I don't need to see... I have to see 8 hours of other movie before your movie makes sense and all this bullshit.
Yeah, and that's part of what's like that's for me is really what the problem with the Marvel stuff is. It's like you have to go to the movies 4 or 5 times a year to keep up.
I've lost the plot at this point. Even when I was keeping up with all of them, at some point I was like, I don't remember 4 movies back what the fuck it was about. Like, they're all the same shit anyway. Right, so.
But they all interconnect in some way, and it's like, like if you want to get the finer details, you kind of have to be playing along, and it's like, and then like this Infinity War trailer, which I haven't seen yet, just came out though, and like, so it's like the new Avengers movie, and it all ties into all this shit that's been going on for the last like 12, 15 years or whatever, and it's like, oh, can't we just have a fucking Wonder Woman movie that's not front-ended and back-ended by her talking to Batman? Like, there's no need for that. Can't we just have a fucking good Wonder Woman movie? Like, which, and that Wonder Woman movie is really good, but...
Yeah, it is. Speaking of which, how's the Wonder Woman ratio on this? Does she get a decent amount of time in here?
She is, like... she is the co-star with Ben Affleck here for the most part.
Okay.
They share, like, leads, I think, for the most part here. Ezra Miller is actually pretty good as the Flash. Jason Momoa is fantastic as Aquaman. Like, I think he is just – he is hamming it up. Like, he is having a blast playing him. Ray Fisher is pretty good as Cyborg. I think he plays the character well. I don't like Cyborg as a character. I think he's overly self-serious, but Jeremy Irons is good as Alfred, but he was in Batman vs. Superman as well. And Ben Affleck is – he's a really good Bruce Wayne and Batman. It is a shame that is he is probably done with that role, though. So
and that – I mean – for my money, like, what I see in him is still potential, and I don't feel like they've actually done anything with him on screen as Batman. I go, yeah, this guy should totally be playing the part, but at least the ones I've seen, which are, I've seen Batman, Superman, what else was he in?
That's it.
Okay, so, yeah, I don't feel, I mean, I thought that movie was not very good, and wasn't getting a ton of interesting stuff to do. But like, yeah, I would love to see an awesome Ben Affleck Batman movie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that's where I can't remember the guy who's doing the new Batman movie now that Affleck is off writing and directing it. But
Matt Reeves,
yeah, he has basically said he doesn't want Ben Affleck as his Batman. So
you know what? I give Matt Reeves a little bit of leeway. He has done some great work with Planet of the Apes. So,
yeah.
It's interesting that I didn't know that he said that. But that's – you know what? Regardless, I'm looking forward to a regular-ass Batman movie. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that we have plenty of great ones already. But
to cut this off, Justice League is a 3. I enjoyed it. I'll probably buy it when it comes out. Like, it's a fun movie just to kind of watch. It's, I mean, the characters, they work really well, much like the Avengers when they're all on screen work really well. They have good comic timing. They, you know, they work well together. So.
Yeah. I will see it at some point. I just, you know my feelings on the whole genre. And speaking of buying movies, did you pick up anything over Black Friday? Any Blu-rays?
No. I thought I did. I thought I bought something digitally, but now I'm drawing a blank on what it was. So
I got Get Out for $5.
Nice. Best Buy,
and I got The Big Sick for $8. So
That's a good one. Yeah,
I'm actually looking forward to watching both of those again. Before we do our end of the year stuff. I guess I'll talk about one of the movies I saw on video over the last couple of weeks, which I was making sure to watch before our end of the year stuff. That's a movie called Good Time, which, you know, it's gotten a lot of like buzz from critics, I think. At least it seemed that way. And, you know, small indie movie. I like to try to keep up on them. Put it this way, I was excited to see this movie, all right? And I'll just read you the IMDb, like, you know, setup for it. After heist goes awry, a bank robber spends a night trying to free his mentally ill brother from being sent to Rikers Island prison.
Okay.
So the bank robber here is played by Robert Pattinson from the Twilight movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good in it as this kind of low-life scumbag guy. I don't know if he... I mean, you don't find out a lot about him. Like, he's not like a drug addict or whatever, but he just seems like a guy who's comfortable in that world, right? But generally, like, all you really know about him is he wants to look out for his brother, you know? He has a brother who is mentally handicapped, played by Benny Safdie, who is actually one of the writers and directors on the film. And he's protecting his brother, but he also, excuse me, brings his brother along to do a bank robbery with him. Things go bad. His brother gets caught by the police. He gets away. And the whole film is kind of like this crime film that plays out over the course of one long night as he's trying to get his brother out of prison, and in the process he keeps making worse and worse decisions and finding himself in worse and worse situations. So it's like a very dark kind of like Adventures in Babysitting type movie. Okay. I liked it. I think like there are things about this movie that are really impressive. Like, this movie works really well as a way to show off the talent of this creative team, this brother and writer director team.
Okay.
But I don't think the movie gets all the way there and accomplishes everything it's trying to do. Despite the fact that there's like a, you know, there's a like an indie kind of hard edge to this movie, the sense of peril never really seems quite where it should. Like, I was never sitting there going like, oh fuck, like he's really fucked now. It was more like, this fucking guy's an idiot, and worse things keep happening. But there's no... While it seems like a dangerous and authentic world, there's no real sense of danger sometimes. Like, there's... I don't know how to explain it. There's not a lot of violence or whatever. I guess is a simple way to say it. It just... Nothing gets quite as serious as you think it's going to get. And the movie doesn't actually build up to any sort of, like, I don't feel... satisfying, like, rock and roll climax. It's just kind of... I mean, there are cool parts. Like, there is a very cool part near the climax where he's going through a amusement park after it's closed down for the night. Like, that's pretty cool just on a visual level, right?
Okay.
There is an interesting death near the end. There is interesting shots. Like, you get to see an action scene play out from a bird's eye view. Like, there's interesting things there. This movie feels like a demo reel for the talent behind it. But as a movie itself, I don't know. I was prepared for this movie to be my fucking movie of the year. I'm like, okay, it's a crime film. It's getting a lot of buzz. Like, I was like, this is going to be the fucking, my jam. It's pretty good. Sorry. I guess I'll shorten what I have to say. It's like, it's good with flashes of brilliance in there. And Robert Pattinson is very good in it as well. But it's just not all the way there for me. It's the type of movie I would give like 3.5 stars, but I'll say 3. Okay. I don't think it's a movie I'll remember much 2 years from now. But I don't regret watching it. I do recommend checking it out.
All right. I saw 2 other movies this week.
Yeah, what do you got?
I saw Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets, which is a ridiculous title.
Yes, tell me about this.
Luc Besson, stars Dane DeHaan, who I don't know. and Cara Delevingne, who is evidently a model.
Dane DeHaan he was in that really weird horror movie from earlier in the year, like the 2.5 hour one.
Yes, The Cure for Wellness. Yes.
Yes. And he's also in Chronicle. He's the bad guy in Chronicle.
Okay. Yeah, he's Valerian. And his partner is played by Cara Delevingne, who's evidently like a model of some sort. She was also in Suicide Squad. She played the Enchantress. I don't know what else she's been in of note. Anyway, she's a pretty girl. And she's kind of fun in this, but the movie is kind of a bore. Like, really boring. It's beautiful looking. Like, this CG is phenomenal. It is about Valerian and his partner, Sergeant Laureline, as they are tasked with trying to get something and then finding out about these other people. I don't know. It's like, I'm trying to explain it. It makes zero sense. I have no idea what happened. I did not fall asleep watching it, but I might as well have, because I was so bored watching it. Like,
really?
For a movie
that
is, it is about 2 hours long, maybe a little over 2 hours. And I think it was like 2:10 maybe. Like, I just completely bored by it. Like, even though it is beautiful looking. And there's some fun scenes in it, but it is just not, there's nothing really going on. Like, it's dull.
I'm sad to hear that, because I'm interested in this movie. But it is, I will say, like, I've heard opinions all across the board on this fucking movie. Like, so,
yeah,
I trust you, I believe you. But
I'm sure there are
I might
people
like it,
like
it. You know?
Yeah, you might come away like it. I just, like, and I'm surprised, because I fucking like, you know, science fiction stuff. Like, this is very...
Especially something new, and, like, it's, like, on the level of Star... I don't know.
Yeah, it's very Star Wars-y. Like, it is...
It has a budget behind it, you know?
Yeah,
and it's original. Budget. Like, God, that doesn't happen much, you know?
Yeah, like, it's just... I don't know. Like, it just... I mean... Valerian and Laureline are fine together. The ultimate reveal is, it's pretty dark what happened, but I didn't care. By the end of it, I was just like, I don't care. So it's a 2 for me. I don't have much more to say on it. Like, I just didn't, I really didn't care about it, which is a shame, because, like, it looked like something cool.
Yeah, I mean... I'll have to let you know when I see it. I'm probably going to see it by the next episode. So,
And I also saw The Hitman's Bodyguard.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds, Samuel L. Jackson. This movie kind of looked like a train wreck. It was fun. It's dumb. It's really stupid. But Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson make it work. They are fun together. They play off each other really well. And, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson plays Samuel L. Jackson just as he does in a lot of other movies. And Ryan Reynolds kind of plays the snarky white dude, but it works here. Like, their charisma, their, chemistry is really good together. So I had fun with it. It's not a great movie. If the action was better, this would be a way better movie. But as it stands, it's held together by Reynolds and Jackson's, like, charisma and performances together.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun. Like, it's a longer film than I thought it was. Like, it's almost 2 hours. Like, it's 118 minutes, I guess. And it's maybe a little bit longer than it should be. There's a spot where I was like, it could end here and I'd be okay with that. But then it goes on for another 20 minutes. But ultimately, I found it to be fun. Like, it was an enjoyable time. I'm not upset that I watched it. It's a 3.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think probably why you enjoyed it maybe is you don't get a lot of, like, buddy comedies like that anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like, buddy cop type comedies. That's a big reason why I liked The Good Guys. Like, it was kind of like that, you know?
Sure.
I guess maybe I'll give it a go. I did not have that on my queue, but
It
Might
might do something for you. Like it's, I thought it was fun enough based on their performances, so.
All right. Well, the last movie I saw for this week is called Wish Upon. It's a 2017 horror film.
Hey, tell me about this, 'cause I've been waiting.
Okay. Well, are you like familiar with this movie at all, or?
I know what the trailer is. There's a box, and you wish, and things bad,
Okay.
like good things happen, but then bad things happen. Yes.
Yeah, it's that. That's it. You got it. That's the
Okay.
movie. There is a certain so it's I'll do the IMDb thing. A teenage girl discovers a box that carries magic powers and a deadly price for using them. So it stars Joey King as the teenage girl. Yeah, she her dad, played by Ryan Phillippe.
Jesus Christ, he's playing dads.
Yes, exactly. That's why I paused for there for that. Who also, is kind of portrayed as like this bum who garbage picks.
Okay.
And while he's garbage picking, he finds this box and gives it to her, and she starts making wishes. I don't know why she would assume. First off, it like. I think the first time she just wishes something in her head, I think. Like I'm trying to figure it out what it is. Like she wished something in her head, it's kind of where I missed the scene where she wished out loud for something to happen and then it does. And then she pieces it together that the box has something to do with it. It's really, really dumb. But there is a certain amount of pleasure in a movie about someone who, I mean, it's literally wish fulfillment. So it's like you get to see someone like, have their little genie in a bottle and they get to like make wishes and shit will happen. Like there is a slight joy to be had in that, but this movie is like, what did I say on Twitter when I was done? Wish Upon, bargain bin teen horror film that feels plucked from obscurity from 1998.
Okay.
Every kill happens off screen, so it can have a
Oh.
PG-13 rating. And it has an unintentionally hilarious ending. 2 out of 5. That was my Twitter review of it. Yeah, dude, every single kill, it would cut away and show like another character's reaction, and that was the kill. And it's like, dude, I'm watching a horror movie. Like, you gotta give me a little bit more than that. Like, you gotta be more clever than that. Unless again, unless I was kind of half watching it because it wasn't very good. And yeah, it just feels like a late 90s crappy horror movie, like Disturbing Behavior or something of that ilk. Although I would say Disturbing Behavior is way better than this. I don't know. It's slick and dull, and again, no violence on screen, basically, and the ending. It's so fucking funny. It almost makes it a so bad, like it's good movie because of how stupid the ending is.
Now I kind of want to watch it just to see like how bad the ending is.
I don't want to oversell it. It's just a funny shot. Like
Okay.
I almost kind of want to spoil it because like now I feel like it just made me laugh in how dumb it also was. And
I'll ask you about it after the show ends, just in case
yeah,
anybody is like still hoping to watch it.
it's like comical, the ending. Like, I don't know if it was trying to be horrifying or trying to be funny, but like, it's actually very funny. I don't know. Like, if you're a horror fan, of course, you'll probably watch it. But I would honestly say, even if you're a horror fan, it's probably not worth it, dude. It's kind of, unless you like are into 90s horror, I know there are some people that like really dig like that post-Scream era. I did at the time, I guess, but now looking back, I don't think I do.
Yeah, so like how do you think this compares to like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legends and
It's like it feels like one of those movies, but
Okay.
even more toothless.
Oh,
Like
okay. Yeah, well, I mean
it,
they did have some of them had some teeth to them.
they yeah, they at least have a little bit. Like they at least had kills, like and some creative shit. Like and I. No, I'm sorry. The
No.
kills that I remember seeing in this, not good. So, I don't know, dude. You might dig it a little more, but I kind of doubt it. Also, it has, besides Ryan Phillippe, it has like a no line role for Jerry O'Connell.
He has no lines.
Yes, he's a character they show like in a flashback, at, like as they're like figuring out what the box is. They're like, and then this one guy owned it, and then they show the one guy who owned it and like how it killed him or whatever the fuck. And it's Jerry O'Connell. I'm like, what the fuck is he? Is he like this desperate now? He's basically an extra in this fucking movie. Like, it didn't come off as a cameo. And they're like, this is right. The guy that was like, he was kind of a big star. Like, not a big star, but above a role with no fucking lines.
Right, right.
It's directed by John Leonetti, who directed Annabelle and something else. He's been involved with a bunch of good horror movies, but the ones he has had the most creative control over are not the best. He's a cinematographer, but he also, what the fuck? He also, yeah, he directed Annabelle and The Butterfly Effect 2.
Oh, so he's big.
There you go. Also, he directed, you're going to love this, Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Nice, nice.
So he's one of those directors.
Just that briefly to touch on Jerry O'Connell, he has not done much in the last few years. He's done like some voice work as Clark Kent and Superman for the Justice League, like DC animated movies. He hasn't actually been in a movie, I think, since 2014. He's uncredited in Wish Upon.
Yeah. I saw that when I looked it up. He's like, why would you want a credit? You didn't do anything.
Yeah. He's been in like some TV stuff, but he's also married to Rebecca Romijn. So,
he's got a maid. He's doing fine. Like, dude, he's still living off that Stand By Me money. Fuck.
Probably. He was in some stuff, too. Like,
I thought there was a movie in the early 2000s called Body Shots that I thought was pretty good that, like, I don't think anybody remembers. But it was kind of about college sexual assaults. Like, that was, like, the subject of the movie. So, kind of timely with what's going on now, maybe. If anyone could dig that up, they probably never released it on Blu-ray because nobody remembers. Like, have you ever seen Body Shots?
No, no.
It's got a good cast and it's kind of decent. Like, it had Tara Reid in it. Like, it had a cast of that time, yeah, for sure. The guy from Office Space, I can't remember his name, Ron something.
I don't know.
You've seen Office Space. The guy from Office Space.
Yes, yes. Jerry O'Connell was in Piranha 3D.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah, there you go. That was
2013? 10. 2010. Yeah, that movie is 7 years old.
I was talking to my uncle tonight. He's like, yeah, my son's in college. I was like, what? I thought he was like 10 years old the last time I saw him. How the fuck, like, what is going on here? We're getting old way too quick. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's all we've seen this week, I think, right?
Yes, saw some TV, right?
Yeah, we're going through The Sopranos again. And I just, what else can you say? The show's amazing. It's still amazing. We're like halfway through our rewatch of it, and yeah, it holds up really well.
No, has your girlfriend ever seen it?
She's seen episodes before, but no, she's watching it for the first time. She was not down with it for probably the first three or so episodes. She was like, I don't know, I'm not feeling this. Like, we just had finished 6 Feet Under, which she, like, I could tell it hooked her right from the first episode, right? And then so we went from that to this, which is a very different flavor. And at first she was like, I'm not liking this. Now we watch at least one episode a night. So it's been a lot of fun. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't remember. It's been 10 years, you know. Like, I remember the big parts. It's kind of fun to rewatch it, too, because, like, the first time you're watching The Sopranos, you're like, oh, who's going to die next? And, like, you're worried about all the mob shit. And the show is not really about that at all. The show is just about life and families and shit, right? And so, like, you get to just kind of soak in that stuff more because you're not worried about who's going to die because I know who's going to die at the end of the season or whatever, you know? So yeah, I've been really enjoying rewatching that again. I'd say, you know, if you have not seen it since it aired back in the early 2000s, it's definitely ripe for a rewatch. And if you've never seen it before, it still holds up. I think it feels pretty modern even now. Although the amount of the degree to which they make Tony Soprano racist in it is like, I don't think they would do that today. I think they would soften it up a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, he's like hardcore. Like, just every episode he says something offensive, it feels like. But he's not like, you know, he's not like walking around a white hood or anything.
Right. I do wonder if like maybe they would tone it in certain ways, but still make it like known that he is racist.
Like, it would be there, but I don't think it would be so prevalent. You know what I mean? Like,
right. You don't have to beat people over the head with it.
Yeah, they would show it a couple times just so you know, like, he's old school, quote unquote, or whatever. Right. But like this show is just on and on about it. But regardless, the show is just, it's full. It's endlessly quotable, like with just very memorable lines. And it's just a good drama. It's a good adult drama. Outside of the mob shit, you could take the mob shit out of that show and just make it about an Italian family, and it's still fucking gold. So
cool.
So that'll do it for this week. I don't know what the fuck I got for next week. Chris, is there anything coming out in theaters, man?
I looked, and here is what Box Office Mojo has as the release schedule: The Disaster Artist,
mm-hmm,
and The Shape of Water, but they are both in super limited runs.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, both of which I won't get. So.
Yeah, The Disaster Artist is in 19 theaters, and The Shape of Water is in 2.
Holy shit.
So, no, I don't think anything, like, in fact, next week, I, Tonya comes out, but that's in limited release too. So it seems there's nothing in theaters until like Star Wars in 2 weeks.
We're clearing a large path around Star Wars.
Yeah, it's like, Jesus almost Christ. Like, why wouldn't you want to get your shit out?
Yeah.
Beforehand,
get out before, yeah.
You're fucked if you're coming out afterwards. Like,
is Star Wars 2 weeks from now?
Yeah, it's December 15th. I will actually, I don't know if I will have a review. I don't know if we'll talk about it on the show for that week, but I will have seen it when we record. Because I'm going
to. Fuck, are you going Wednesday?
Thursday, but at 7 o'clock. So by the time I get home, like, and for us recording at 10, I will have seen it, but you probably will not have at that point. So
maybe I'll try to go see it and we'll record at that time.
All right.
I don't know though if I'll still be able to buy tickets at this point. So we'll see. I'll try. Yeah. We'll find out. I am excited for Star Wars. And then once we get past Star Wars, we're gonna start doing our near the end stuff.
Yeah, there's still some stuff I want to see.
There's stuff I want to see, but like, yeah, I definitely wanted to wait for at least Star Wars. And then after that, you know, there might be a couple things, but I think I'll be pretty comfortable with my list after I see that.
I want to see The Post, but that doesn't look like it's going to be in wide release until after the New Year. So.
Yeah, like that. I was thinking about that movie, and I was like, it's like, I basically will put that as a movie you could pick next year. Then, if you want to say that was one of the best movies of 2018, then do it, because that's when it was available to see. You know,
for most people. So
yeah.
That's how I view it.
Yeah.
All right.
So something question mark next week, and Star Wars and movie of the year stuff to come.
Yeah. Sounds fun. All right.
We'll be back.
Movie dudes. Do 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 do.